This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Woodrow Wilson Guthrie was born in Oklahoma a few weeks after his namesake received the Democratic presidential nomination in 1912. Woody Guthrie suffered through untold personal tragedies, the Dust Bowl, and the Great Depression of the 1930s. He wound up turning his own and the nation's troubles into song. A new biography titled Ramblin' Man, The Life and Times of Woody Guthrie, takes the balladeer from his birth in Oklahoma to his life as a musician in New York to his death in 1967. The book's author is Ed Cray, a professor of journalism at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Southern California.
Woody Guthrie, contrary to the image of the Rube who fell off the turnip truck with his natural-born ability, was indeed born into the middle class. His father was a very successful real estate agent who, in the crash after the First World War, lost the farm a day for 50 days, as Woody put it. And the family descended into poverty. In the 20s, things were hard for the family. They were made harder when Woody's mother, Nora, who was obviously in the throes of what we now know as Huntington's disease, threw a kerosene lantern at her husband and burned him from the neck to the groin. She was hospitalized in the state asylum in Norman. The father, Charlie, was sent off to stay with relatives to recuperate. And Woody was left to wander or fend for himself.
Mm-hmm. And he picked up his musical abilities, his interest in music from those around him, I guess.
Shoeshine boy on the streets of Okemah, traveling medicine shows, phonograph records. Woody learned a lot of material from the phonograph records of the early country and western industry. He played in bands first and often played a comic role in bands with a fake mustache, or played the bones or the tambourine or anything else he could get his hands on. His first musical instrument was a harmonica, which he played backwards. That is to say, instead of the bass notes being on the left, he had them on the right, played the harmonica upside down, in other words.
They say I'm a Dust Bowl refugee. Yes, they say I'm a Dust Bowl refugee. They say I'm a Dust Bowl refugee. Lord, Lord, but I ain't gonna be treated this way.
Woody's life, his creative life in my mind, probably ran no more than 7 years. From 1937 until 1944, when he was in the Merchant Marine. He had one burst of creativity after that with the birth of his daughter, Kathy, the child he called Stack of Bones.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about who he played with and what he did in the 40s. He was part of, I guess, a seminal folk music group, if that's what you could call it, called the Almanac Singers.
Indeed. He joined the Almanacs, and Pete Seeger, who was the leader, more or less the leader of the Almanacs in New York, at the suggestion of Alan Lomax, the legendary folk music collector, who was a big booster of Woody's. In fact, it was Alan Lomax, when he heard Woody sing Pretty Boy Floyd in late February of 1940, who pushed Woody into a radio career and into recording for RCA the towering collection of the period, which was Woody's Dust Bowl Ballads.
Pretty boy grabbed the log chain, and the deputy grabbed his gun, and in the fight that followed, he laid that deputy down. There's a many a starving farmers, the same old story told, and how this outlaw paid their mortgage and saved their little home.
He was married three times in his life. You quote his brother, his first wife's brother, rather, Matt, saying that he was the least adapted to marriage of anyone who ever took the vow.
Indeed. The truth of the matter is, Woody was an indifferent and on-again-off-again father for his first family of three children. He was a non-provider for virtually all eight of his children, and there may have been others, as a matter of fact. He was divorced by his first wife, Mary, and met Marjorie Mazia, who was a Martha Graham dancer. The result was a marvelous, marvelous love affair. I never expected this when I started the book, between Marjorie and Woody, a love affair that lasted for the rest of Woody's life. He died in 1967 at the age of 55. And a love affair that even lasted beyond, because Marjorie, though she married, let's see, three times subsequently, always told her husbands that when you marry me, you marry Woody Guthrie.
And that union produced four children, including the daughter you mentioned earlier, Kathy.
Yes, she was stack of bones, and she was a marvelous child. And she inspired Woody in the last creative burst of his life to write a series of children's songs. There were, maybe about 35 or 40 of these songs. My favorite of them all is Why, Oh Why. It's a it's a great song for parents and children. And in these songs, Woody, who was himself never ashamed to get down on the floor and play mumbly peg or marbles with kids, captured childhood and that spirit of childhood.
Why can't a bird eat an elephant? Why, oh why, oh why? 'Cause an elephant's got a pretty hard skin. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. Why can't a mouse eat a streetcar? Why, oh why, oh why? 'Cause a mouse's stomach could never hold big enough to hold a streetcar. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
One of the things that strikes me, because we hear so much, or I recall from the 60s, there was a lot of criticism of Woody Guthrie for being an alleged communist or fellow traveler, but actually he was extremely patriotic.
Very much so. I think there were three elements to understand Woody in his music. One was his intense patriotism, I think probably best illustrated by Pastures of Plenty, written in 1940 as the U.S. was building the arsenal of democracy to support Great Britain against the Nazis.
Green pastures of plenty from dry desert ground, from that Grand Coulee Dam where the water runs down. Ever stayed in this union, us migrants have been. We'll work in this fight, and we'll fight till we win.
The second characteristic was his sense of optimism. Life could be made better. He never gave up that spirit, that sense. And the third is a kind of odd mixture, peculiarly American, of what we can call lowercase Christian socialism. Woody Guthrie was very religious, although when he was asked, what's your religion, he would say, all. The truth is that he was Christian and he was a socialist. Somehow it was possible on the American frontier to link so-called godless socialism with Christianity, and it worked.
So what's his legacy? He did more, it seems, than paved the way for Bob Dylan and other folk singers, certainly.
Well, Woody Guthrie, the man, or Woody Guthrie, the icon, are two different legacies. Woody Guthrie, the man, was a kind of beatnik before his time. Woody Guthrie, the icon, showed generations who have followed, and Dylan, of course, and Bruce Springsteen, and Steve Earle, and Andy DeFranco, and I could go on and on, learned that you could write songs that had meaning and were something more than moon-June rhymes about love, that you could write songs that addressed issues of the day, that addressed causes that were worth singing about and celebrating.
Ed Kray's new book is Ramblin' Man, The Life and Times of Woody Guthrie. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Brian.
For more on the life of Woody Guthrie, including a rarely heard radio performance, visit our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Brian Naylor.
trying to read the bulb of the cool oil lamp, trying to read the bulb of the cool oil lamp. I guess I come to the end of the line. I guess I come to the end of the line. I guess I come to the end of the line. I guess I come to the end of the line. Ain't no country extra fine if you ain't miles from the end of the line. Ain't no country extra fine if you ain't onto the power line. Well, I guess I come to the end of the line. I guess I come to the end of the line. I guess I come to the end of the line. I guess I come to the end of the line.